for the strong and the bold who have been taunted and traumatised for over 37 years. This one is for you. Richmond, yes, Richmond, our premiers. 5:13 p.m. on Saturday, September 30, 2017, is officially Tiger Time.
We never wait until the last one.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And I want you to think back a year ago, Andy, and the hoarse, raspy voice of a man, physically broken, but emotionally and spiritually redeemed after the win versus Geelong in round one of the finals. I think it's a different feeling this time.
Yeah, it's a completely different feeling. I remember just being exhausted but elated.
Mm.
Then it was a very, very powerful emotion. I mean, it was a very different game too. But yeah, it was today. It's just the smug confidence of an overdog. Oh, sorry. I must admit, as the weekend has gone on, you know, more scenarios have come into my mind of what could happen in a fortnight's time. So the mood has already started to shift. But yep, Friday and Saturday was just all smug confidence.
I know, it was so weird going to work. I would have preferred without it, but it did. I was able to watch the rest of the weekend in a very relaxed fashion.
Yeah, I did. It's amazing how much you can enjoy football when your team's already through to the next round.
Yeah, and through in pretty comprehensive style. I was so worried leading up to the game. I mean, that may just be my own personal demons, but yeah, it just, yeah, and then, I mean, the first quarter was super tough, but yeah.
I mean, in some ways it was a replay of the Geelong game till half time. We had a bigger lead, but it was a super tough game. But I actually, Nick, I marked down the moment where, and I did actually notice this live, but watching the replay with the benefit of hindsight, someone we've talked about before on the pod, but friend of the podcast yesterday, Ross, made the point on Twitter that it's great to watch the moment when a team breaks against Richmond.
Yep.
And I'm going to call this with 15 minutes left into the second quarter, in the second quarter. So only early in the
early.
Second quarter, Frawley double fists a ball that he could have easily marked. It's okay to double fist when you're coming over the back of a pack or something.
Yeah.
But he does it in a very...
And it was a bit wet.
Yeah, but the rain hadn't really started getting really heavy by then. It got worse as later in that quarter. And it was actually at that moment where I thought they have no confidence because they're more afraid of making a mistake with the heavy forward press than they are of taking possession of the ball. And I'm going to put it that already it was looking grim for them then. And Nick, it actually, this is one of these weird things, and I hate to be one of those smug professional, like a professional pundit, but the game almost happened exactly like we expected. Like, they went in far too tall. They couldn't maintain
the pressure. How we hoped, actually. I think it's probably a better way to put it.
Yeah, but we're never so confident in the pre-podcast. Yeah, that is the... But against the good team,
that's true. We were pretty insufferable.
And it's actually what happened. I don't know what Clarkson was thinking. He went in far too tall. Like, so much so that I thought, is there something about windy days at the MCG, wet and windy days at the MCG that I just don't get? And he did make the team slightly smaller when he took out Shoemaker due to his late injury in inverted commas. But they were still, you know, they were playing two rucks, which was never going to work against us. And they looked slow and tired, and they were completely stuffed when they got an injury. The game was already over by then, effectively. It was just... It went to plan. It went beautifully. It was Richmond's one wood, and it was great. I really enjoyed watching it, best of all.
It was good. I think it... I've been thinking about this a bit. You know, Alistair Clarkson and the Hawthorn Football Club as a whole are no mugs. And I honestly think that they they felt that if they played us at our game, they couldn't win. So that the only way to do it was to play against type, even though that they knew it was a risk. Because, you know, the flip side to not playing Segler is that you have to play another sort of mid-sized player, and actually, they don't have a lot of depth in those positions. And so, yeah, I mean, we saw, I thought, the story of the game was actually at both ends of the playing lists. Like, our stars shone brighter than theirs, and our bottom six played better than theirs. And, you know, that takes you a very long way to winning. And I think that, you know, perhaps if they had played more mid-sized players, they would have looked overawed as well.
Could be. I mean, as you say, they're not mugs, but it game plan, and the sort of, as we discussed beforehand, their game plan is not the kind of game plan that worries us, despite what the media said. It's like they don't watch tape at all. They just turn up and watch the game on Saturday and don't look. Look, you can see the teams that have given us trouble recently are teams that stack the back line and then gamble and go very long up the middle. Geelong, for instance, that's their latest game plan. They introduced about 4 or 5 weeks ago, and that's the game plan they introduced. The problem with it is your midfield pressure is crap. So that's what happened against Melbourne. But it gave them, it was a different kind of game plan that kept them, due to a few fortuitous circumstances, kept them in the game against us. I just don't see, and this is such arrogance, we'll probably lose next week, but I mean, we had plus 29 inside 50s in a final against a
top 14.
Even if that wasn't a final, that was just such an ass kicking.
Yeah, it was pretty good fun. I do have when you're talking about arrogance, I do have a confession. So, actually booked a family weekend away next weekend. Didn't tell anybody because I just thought it would be, you know, possibly bad form, but also possibly jinx us. And yeah, quite happy about it now.
Yeah, and I actually booked the flights to Melbourne for the prelim a little while ago because I was so confident we were going to make it. Glad we did.
Glad we did.
Would have been a depressing weekend in Melbourne for the Collingwoods prelim. But just on game plan, before we start talking about individuals, another thing about height is that, like, one of the great things about our team is we have enough guys who play taller than their listed height that they either create a contest or take contested marks when you don't expect it. I mean, Caddy and Costania's great at causing the contest. Rioli, we scored two goals off Rioli's, once he's ruckwork and once he's marking contestation.
No one had more contested marks than Dusty.
Yep, we actually beat them in contested marks.
Mm.
Despite the fact that they were, you know, they had, they were taller on average, but that doesn't mean so much. They played more marking players, if you know.
Yeah, definitely.
So, you know, you can try the big boy kick it long strategy. Not such a good idea on a wet day, but I'm not even sure it's necessarily going to work on a dry day, either.
No, they had Connor Nash, who's a big athletic Irishman who's got a little bit of talent, but, you know, he's raw. He's overmatched in a final like that. Yeah, and if by some bizarre set of circumstances Hawthorn managed to win through to the grand final, that'd be an awesome outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. There are other teams on that list I'd quite happily play, having watched all the weekend's games closely.
True. Well, I think we should start talking some specifics, but whatever they've been doing perhaps keeping him in a cryovac chamber for the last 6 weeks. Whatever they did to Trent Cotchin, it worked.
Yeah, exactly. The doppelganger inferior version of Trent Cotchin that they've been rolling out. Kept the real Trent Cotchin fit. It's great to have the real Trent back because he's really good. He's 17, was it 17? 16 contested possessions. Just fantastic.
Monster dudes all the time.
Yep, and contributed to us. Look, we didn't actually win the contested possessions, but we came within five. And, you know, when there's 170 in a game on both sides, that's you know, it's close enough. And if we draw the contested possessions...
Yeah, world of pain.
And Trent led that. Dusty actually got more, 17. Lambo came back and got 12. Dion got a respectable 10. And Riola, who I'm sure we'll talk about at length, got a mammoth 12. Mr. September.
Love him.
Actually, it should just be Daniel September, because the whole family is incredible. It shines brightest when the lights are on. But either way... the midfield was fantastic at matching, you know, their brightest lights. You know, Tom Mitchell will probably win the Brownlow.
Yep.
So, and not in the top five rated players on the ground.
No. Career high for contested possessions for Dan Rioli.
Yep. And, you know, mentioned his goal contesting. That goal he kicked around the corner. Oh. I reckon when you consider the pressure and how he had to pick it up, I reckon that's about a 1 in 50 shot for an average NFL.
My note on him is played with a dry football.
Yeah. But just that ruck tap I mentioned before, that was the ruck, he contested that ruck tap, probably actually technically won it. that was the sequence of play that I believe led to Dusty's goal.
Mm.
The goal.
Yeah. Yeah, Dusty was great. Yeah. I was actually watching the replay with the kids, and yeah, they like other players, and they like Dan Rioli, but they live for Dusty when he gets the ball. Right?
Yeah, well, I mean, best on ground for score involvement, led the team in clearances, 17 contested possessions, as we mentioned, by far the highest rated player on the AFL rankings.
I think he had two smothers, which is a lot for Dusty.
Yeah, it is. Like, he did look vaguely interested on the defensive end, so good for Dusty.
Hmm.
But, like, this is, I mean, we've come into peak Dusty at the right end of the year.
Like, there's quite a few players who are peaking, and it's great.
It's hard to, but it's, yeah. And speaking of that, I reckon two things.
Hmm.
I think that was Prestia's best game for the club, and... The other thing I'll concede is that's probably the fifth time I've said it on the podcast.
Well, I was struck. So several years ago, I mentioned one thing that was unique about Prestia, and I think Prestia at his best is sort of the ultimate third or fourth midfielder. Like you don't want him to be your best midfielder, but if he's your third or fourth best midfielder, you're in fantastic shape. And... So the Jaden Short led the AFL in metres gained in about 500, with about 530 a game, and Prestia had 630 on Thursday night. So just that ability both to win inside ball, cover the ground, bob up for a goal now and then, work hard both ways. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, I actually, one thing, I agree with everything you said, that he looked great, but I just... To the eye, he had lateral movement that I hadn't seen before. He just looked very spry.
He was pretty great in last year's finals too.
His numbers were similar, but I've never seen him look this sprightly, I don't think. I don't want to... And that kick goal he kicked from 53, and it went through on the four. You know, we didn't overplay it, but his kicking was awful when he joined Richmond.
Yeah.
It really was, you know, that kick would have landed, that travel kick this in the same position at the start of last year when he supposedly wasn't injured, that kick travels 40 metres in the wrong direction. And this time, off one step, he kicked it about 55 metres straight as a dime. Yeah, he's looking superb.
Minty fresh. Look, there's quite a few in that category. Yeah, I mean, much has been said about Jack Higgins, but yeah, he's in some pretty consistent form as well.
Yeah, I think his game suits finals, particularly because of the, you know, short little kicks to advantage and the way he just sort of scrappily gets involved in semi-broken play. I think it's his go.
I thought he was better defensively than he's been for a few weeks too.
Yeah, that intercept he got to led to the goal. It was great. He's gambling a bit. He tried that earlier in the game and didn't get away with it. I wonder whether the coaches will keep letting him doing it. It strikes me as a very, you know, he's like the cornerback in the NFL who gambles and goes for the big interception.
Yeah, when it comes off, it looks great.
Yeah, so we'll see. But it did look bloody great, and it was good that Caddy got legged and it finished with the goal because it was the control. But yeah, I was, as you know, I started off loving Higgins, then I got slightly disappointed, and now the grass back up. I'm back where I started because I love that game.
He is absolutely best 22. Lambert stepping back in after, what, 3-4 weeks? Didn't look like he...
Missed a beat.
But Pat, I think we've gone too long without mentioning K-Mac.
Oh, he's 3 goals. I know. Yeah. Speaking of...
And some monstering dudes as well.
Yeah, I mean, not a huge amount of the ball, in fairness. But, yeah, he's just... He has the game, as we've said before, that's, you know, suits big games at the MCG.
Yep.
He was in the right place at the right time, and it all came right for him. And pleasingly, he kicked all the shots he needed to kick.
Yeah.
Which is just great.
It was, really enjoyed
just
it.
Caddy. Just Caddy. I wrote initially after the game, I wasn't as high on his game, but when I watched the replay, he was great. Like, his physical work was fantastic. And, you know, obviously he kicked 2 goals and had 17 possessions, so he had a decent game by any measure. But when you watch his sort of his physical work, his ability to create a contest, you know, the extra things he does, he's a really important part. He's our true centre-half forward, and he does it very well.
Yeah, and taking... Yeah, I really didn't think Sicily had much impact as well, and he's a pretty key player, but he did a lot of... he'd regularly go deep, forcing Sicily to follow him. He couldn't drop off him because he was presenting so hard. And I think what would have been extra satisfying for him is he's got some of that, Geelong, stink off him, and, now he's up to he no longer has a losing record in finals.
Yeah, it must be, as I said before on the podcast, I really admire Geelong for how hard they try, but they just don't have the leadership to get over the line in big finals. By the way, actually, I used to say that sarcastically, but watching Geelong, they really have some drop. Other than Dangerfield, their top end, Dangerfield and Hawkins still are as good as their reputation. Selwood and Abbott are not anywhere remotely close to it. But we digress. One last thing about Caddy. It was very nice of him to offer Dusty's opponent glass of tea with a tea bag during the second quarter. It was he's a giving guy, Josh Caddy. And by the way, his trash talking is absolutely elite.
Yeah, it's elite. I've no idea what it's saying, but there's a lot of it.
when a goal's been kicked, even if he didn't have that much to do with it, he's just letting the guy's opponent, the boundary umpire, just letting everyone know about it and their role in playing and setting up that goal.
Yeah, good times. We've also talked too long without praising the defence because they were great.
They were. Lossie took one of the most amazing marks. Oh, look, actually, no, let's start with the really positive ones. Rance was amazing.
Oh, controlled. The way he controlled the game and just they would stop because he was 50 metres ahead and just destined to dominate the clearance was fantastic. Brewston...
And they didn't have anyone to play on him. Like, this is... Nope. We forget. He's had a few slightly less favourable matchups for him, but, you know, this is why he's perennial All-Australian, because he's bloody great. Yeah. Amazing.
Gunston and Bruce average about 4.5 goals a game. They'd won. And didn't really look like it. They really struggled. They just struggled to win one-on-one matchups all night, I thought.
Yeah, everybody was fantastic. you know, Grimes, we mentioned already, was just amazing. Took lots of contested marks.
Grimes is another one who's in absolutely peak form.
Should have been All-Australian, but, you know, it's all right. They don't select it. If they selected it during the final series, it would have an even bigger bias towards the good team. So it's probably good that they don't. Yep, they're all amazing. I mean, Hooley probably wasn't at his best. And Broad didn't get much of the footy. He was good defensively, but he did a head duck.
Yeah. Broad hasn't won much footy for quite a while now.
Yeah, and he ducked his head right in front of the bench, which, you know, it's the one place in amateur footy you never duck your head because the coach is right there. But, you know, hopefully he'll get over that. Nick, one thing that was noticeably high was that Jack was our pressure axe. I mean, it was just a high-pressure game, but you know, the numbers were high across the – obviously Rioli and Graham was high, but like almost throughout the whole team that they were getting very high numbers. It was lovely to see Castagna, Conker, Edwards, all very high numbers, even though Edwards was fairly quiet. Evan Martin had a respectable number.
Yeah, I just felt like they just turned up to play, which, you know, you always hope that that's the case, but you just never quite know.
They turned up like a tiger that's been caged.
Yeah, and especially after they've essentially walked their way through most of the last month of the season.
Yeah, there was a case to be made. Maybe they got soft from playing a whole bunch of cupcakes and having the bye. I'll just point out that Sean Grigg, bless him, had 25 touches, but had 63 pressure acts, which is, that's normally a good Jack Graham game. This is phenomenal
That's a high standard.
For a fairly outside, a guy who's, you know, let's face it, made his career at Richmond hanging around the outside and second racking. May he get his second. I am completely on board for another year of Sean Grigg, by the way.
Yeah, definitely. It was, I don't think we talked about last week the didn't we mention Grigg and Hooley going around another year?
We mentioned on Twitter, but it hasn't been confirmed yet. So one thing, we did have three debutants, Higgins, Short, and only two. Higgins and Short, I forgot the Conkers played twice before, but you mentioned that on Twitter. I thought Short did look slightly nervous to start with, but he found his feet. He actually missed a long shot.
His kicking was off.
Yeah, but I think, you know, that's all right. It's a wet day, and he might have been slightly nervous because, you know, it can't have been easy watching the boys play when last year, but he'll be better, to use the old cliche, he'll be better for the run.
Yeah, definitely. So I think, and he didn't stop doing his thing, you know, even though his kicking was shaky, he didn't dial it back and start trying to do dinky little safe kicks. He kept running 15 metres and trying to kick at 50. So it was workmanlike.
I think he had the second highest long yards gained of the team. He did, yeah. So you can't exactly say he went into a shell, as you say, yeah.
What did you think of Conker's game? Having debated his inclusion?
By his standards, it was quite good. Yeah. So, for whatever reason, Dimmer thinks he should be in the team. I'm sure he'll think he is next week. I think Conker's probably the best thing he does is tackle. And have a look, 9 minutes left in the first, if anyone's going to watch the replay. Watch what happens when he tries to tackle Jay Grammira in a crucial moment in the game.
I'll watch it again.
And also, his teammates don't give it to him unless they absolutely have to. The nice thing about Conker, though, Dust burnt him badly at one moment. But nice thing, just let me say one positive thing, is Bruce loves him. So anytime he does something vaguely competent, Bruce says a really nice thing about it. And I actually really like Bruce. He's one of my favourite commentators.
Amira was drafted 1-1, so he's a pretty good athlete. But Yeah.
Yeah. But it's the, what are you there for? Like, what do you do better? What do you do at an AFL level? Anyway.
I thought, you know, the game was extremely pleasing and one-sided, despite Shane Edwards and Jack both not being quite at their usual selves.
That's true. I mean, the flip side of that is we had a couple of guys play out of their skin. But, yeah, with Jack, maybe a bit with both of them, is there was a bit of decoy work going on. Like, if you've been watching Richmond for the last 5 weeks, you know you have to stop Jack. And to a lesser extent, if you watch Richmond at all over the last 2 years, you know you have to stop Shedder. So maybe there was a bit of the fact that Hawthorn had done their research, but didn't do them much good because we're too deep.
Nope. No, it. Look, they certainly came to play. That 31 tackles in the first quarter was pretty incredible. But yeah, it just.
Oh, yeah, the first quarter was fantastic football to watch. It was so hot.
Yeah, but as has been said, you've got to maintain it for four quarters. I think the wet weather did help us. And God,
oh, absolutely. Yeah,
I love Tony. Toby Nankervis monstering dudes. I always love, but yeah, he's a great wet weather ruckman.
Yeah, actually, we've taken too long to mention him. You know, we talked beforehand about how the advanced metrics loves Stratton. And I'll throw, not Stratton, McAvoy. Nankervis was easily better than him on sort of a cumulative ranking of his total contribution to the game. McAvoy was not terrible, had more hitouts to advantage, but, you know, we basically drew the clearances, won the centre square clearances, and, Nankervis did more, overall around the ground with the footy. So I reckon, we don't always say this. I reckon Nank won the matchup and won it by. It wasn't a knockout, but it was a comfortable. Consensus points decision.
It was comfortable. Yep.
Yeah.
Look, we've talked about most of the players, but I did want to say how nice, how popular Jack Graham's goal was. Like,
it's a good goal too.
Yeah, it was a nice goal.
It's a hard kick off the outside of the right foot. Yeah. So yeah, there was a lot of popular goals on the weekend. The watching the team celebrate. There was a moment where in the fourth, where Dusty's on the bench, and he celebrates. There was another goal was kicked, and Dusty celebrates pretty hard, and you sort of see how much it means to him. It was, you know, it was pretty special.
Anyone else you wanted to mention from the game?
No. Well, you know, I mean, I could sit here and say how great they all were, but.
Yeah, we've done that. I think we've covered about 17. good times. For a small splash of cold water, as we walked off the ground, and I think it was Bruce referred to us as overwhelming premiership favourites. But actually, midway through the third quarter, was the first time for the season that our odds of winning the premiership have ticked over 50%.
Then it'd only just be over 50%.
Yeah, right? It's 52% on the betting line.
You watch that Collingwood West Coast game. Stuff happens in football.
I was impressed. I'm glad we don't have to play West Coast in Perth. That mixture of, like, it's different to Richmond, but they've clearly looked at
it's
us.
It's very different.
They've looked at us and they've drafted Ryan and Venables, who are both super quick, and they've got Willy Rioli from the year before, and suddenly they've got three quick guys at the feet of two pretty talented tall marking forwards. So, yeah, they're no jokes.
Yeah, that's true. They play a different pressure game though. They don't pressure as much to the ground. I thought Collingwood were really impressive. On the odds thing, it was James Brayshaw during the Collingwood game said, "Oh, and Collingwood were massive underdogs today. They were 7-point underdogs." I know because that attracted my interest.
They're quite heavy favourites against GWS.
So coming back to Richmond, it's like, who could ever beat Richmond? Well, actually. you know, what happens if one of our top line midfielders goes down in the first quarter? Like, you're playing a good team, and all the teams that we will play from here, we have to beat two really good teams, and weird stuff happens.
Yeah, yeah, it's going to be the Hunger Games. There's, you know, some teams I'd like to play more than others, and we'll talk about that more next week. But, yeah, yeah, like, last year we had to beat the other top four teams to win the Premiership. You just don't get it easy.
No, and I just had the, sorry to do this, Nick, but I just thought the horrifying idea of losing to Collingwood in a Premiership, if you've gone in as favourites, yeah. Anyway, the idea of a Collingwood Richmond prelim is both fascinating and exciting and also terrifying.
Mm, yeah, definitely. So, oh, look, before we talk about the VFL, wanted to touch on two things. The you know, Trent Cotchin, not only captain of Richmond, but seemingly captain of for the AFL as well, with the initiative to wear the two black armbands for Travis Farco's sister and Rory Sloane's child. Oh, yeah, that's pretty classy.
Yeah, I'm very on brand for Trent as well.
Mm. And amidst the demolishing Hawthorn, we also managed to ruin AFL free agency, which up until now had been an outstanding success, where all the free agents go to the teams at the bottom of the ladder. But now that, you know, the reigning premiers got the best free agent, it's all ruined.
Yes, I know. The reigning premiers, as opposed to, say, a perennial top four team based in Sydney who's won several of the last premierships. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't recall when Hawthorn drafted James Frawley either.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and when we were on our knees at the end of 2016 and flogged off Leeds, that basically we thought we were selling the family silver for just the slightest skerrick of hope, no one actually objected at all when we were giving it to the AFL Super Club, who, you know, everyone thought was going to win the Premiership, who were already ridiculously talent-stacked with top five picks, and we gave them a former number one pick, and no one complained, and everyone thought what a good trade it was. It was actually a good trade for probably everyone at the time.
Yeah, and it turned out great for us.
Yeah, it did. But actually on practice, in paper, it was the rich getting richer, and it's exactly what's happening this time. But yeah, no one, and the poor getting poorer, and no one complained.
Yep. Yeah. And look, I said it on Twitter as well. But they are not going to match. There's just, they get a top four draft pick, and yeah, it would be impossible for us to come up with a trade of draft picks and players who want to go to the Gold Coast that would be as valuable as that.
Nor should in any way we contemplate it. You know, at that point we're just going to walk away.
Mm. I just can't see it happening. Like, it's only, the only time it happened was with Dangerfield, and there they, they didn't do a market value trade just because Adelaide was also a very good team. They just sweetened it, so it was slightly more valuable than what they would have got if they'd got the compo pick. And this is nothing like that situation.
Yeah, besides, Lynch is coming off a bad knee injury. He's a very good player, but, you know, getting a top four pick for that, for Lynch, is in any world actually not a bad deal.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about Lynch some more on another podcast. I've said to myself, no, look, that's next year. Should focus on the finals, worry about that. But yeah, I've already started watching a bit of YouTube stuff.
Yeah, so have I, actually. And thinking a lot about the, I'm so in love with how we play our forward structure right now. It's so unique and different, and it dominates, creates such a different look than all the other teams in the AFL. But you can't always do the same thing over and over and expect it to be successful. So I know it's the right thing to do, but
yeah,
you know,
definitely.
Part of me is going to be sad to lose the land of the midgets.
I'm going to be over it in 30 seconds.
You think?
Yeah. So the for an anecdote that some of our listeners will appreciate more than others, when LeBron James left Cleveland, apparently one of the big things was that he just wanted to play with more smart footballers, and I reckon, I don't know this for certain, but I have a hunch that Tom Lynch is a pretty smart footballer, and the Jack Riewoldt relationship is, while it's not always going to be super smooth, I think it's going to be fine.
Yeah, I wonder actually the... Oh, this is very self-serving, but perhaps his brains is reflected a bit in his choice of club, where he's going to somewhere where he knows that they have a very, you know, he's really prioritized sort of team chemistry, good coaching. God, you never would have said that 3 years ago, would you? Playing with, you know, matured, settled group, and, you know, he has genuine value add rather than, I'm sure he could have got more money elsewhere. And, you know, let's face it, we're great right now, but, you know, there's three or four Melbourne teams you could go for that you would potentially, you can talk yourself into being Premier contenders next year.
Yep. Yeah. So the other news from the weekend, sadly disappointing loss for the VFL team, and just to put the little sort of fear in the back of your mind is, they lost the game essentially because they failed to take some good chances in front of goal in the last quarter.
Yeah. Doom. Like the fact that my boy Menadue was quite active. We'll talk about it more next week, but.
It was really fun to watch it. But yeah, disappointing outcome. I realised watching it, I really hate watching Essendon supporters be happy.
Yeah, someone pulled out a really offensive tweet about how Dustin Martin will never again play in finals, written in 2016 by an Essendon supporter. I retweeted it just so we don't even want.
You're
even
feeling a bit down. Salty.
Yes, let's not make the. Let's not forget what they were like. When they're on top.
No. So, except obviously for Gold Coast, who've never made the final, I was amused to see that every single club in the AFL has a more recent finals win than Essendon.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to come back, Nick. Back next week with a luxurious, hopefully as confident preview. Right now, who would you rather play, GWS or the Pies?
I'd rather GWS, with assuming Josh Kelly's done. I think they're starting to run out of soldiers.
My guess is Josh Kelly will be playing and be half the player he is normally.
Mm.
By the way, but he should have taken the money.
Yeah, Collingwood are pretty solid favourites. So yeah, I think. Yeah, I'm preparing myself mentally for that.
I hate doing it, but we're going to be barracking for injuries.
Oh, look.
Just short-term ones, three-week ones. Don't want to hurt anyone's career.
One-week suspensions. Look, it is weird that so we've slept-walked through the last couple of weeks of the season, and now we'll have two in 3 weeks off. Like, there's no excuse for us not to be cherry-ripe.
But the other terrifying thing is, like, it's four quarters of football, and then this whole 6 months we've been building up for the finals for the last 6 months. As soon as we realised we're good again, like, this is it. Yep. This is, like, the whole season where it's success or failure is defined in the next 2 weeks, and it'll all be over so quickly.
I know. And then, so with the West Coast Collingwood game, that was it. Every game is sudden death from here, and there's some really good football teams going to be knocked out. Oh, I'm getting me a mess.
I'm Andy.
I'm Nick. We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
For the strong and the bold who have been taunted and traumatised for over 37 years, this one is for you. Richmond, yes, Richmond, our premiers. 5:13 p.m. on Saturday, September 30, 2017, is officially Tiger Time.
Never reach until the first one.
Like the tiger of old. Martin, three votes.